Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:26 Irish summertime. Today is October 3rd, and of course, it being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, let's have a quick review of the week. I can't give you any live prices because I'm afraid the server in UK has in the UK has fallen over, and I just don't have access to them. The only screen I have in front of me is my broker screen. We see that today has definitely been a case of buy the rumor, sell the news, because Wall Street was up in excess of 3% at one point today, but it has given it all up following the rescue package being passed by Congress afternoon time in the USA, and it's been signed into law by President Bush. So the rescue package is certainly going to go ahead, and the Treasury are talking about hiring 10 different asset management firms to help with the buying of the subprime debt, or certainly it's debt that is illiquid and can't be readily priced. And it's going to be a quandary as to just how they do that and how much they actually pay for it, because that has been one of the main sticking points for this plan all along. But certainly we will find that out in the coming week. This has been a week in which volatility has reigned, and certainly this week the VIX hit a new all-time high. There have been, sorry, that's not true, but it is certainly been a very significant high, and certainly a high for this present crisis. But other gauges of risk in the market have been hitting new all-time highs. The TED spread is certainly one of them, and we've seen a number of other spreads also moving out to new high ground. But we're also getting extremely oversold readings here. Now, certainly the TED spread, as it moves out, it has got a progression of higher lows at this point, as it's been having a little bit more two-way action as it got up towards the present levels, and David has posted quite a few of those charts in there today. But what we are also seeing now is that credit markets are seizing up almost entirely. It's almost like one of those medieval competitions where it's the last man standing, a melee, and banks are unwilling to trust one another, and they are hoarding cash because there is still so much risk in the market. Hopefully, once the mechanics of this rescue package are worked out and they can start to unload some of the very worst of their assets from their balance sheets, that will help to restore confidence. And hopefully, we will start to see a diminution of the amount of write-downs that we're seeing. But looking at how this is affecting markets, what we have right across the boards is an incredible amount of volatility. It makes any kind of trend running tactic a nonsense, because we're just not getting trending activity by and large at all. In the equity markets, we see the vast majority of stock markets are still in these relatively consistent downtrends and more or less pressuring the lower side of their current ranges. We did see a number of these markets breaking down this week. Examples there would be following the very big downward dynamic we had earlier in the week. We saw the Dow Jones, the S&P, the Nasdaq all breaking below their mid-September lows. We had the same thing in Germany, in Europe, for example. We also had the same in Japan for the Nikkei. However, what we're also starting to see now is that banks are starting to outperform on the upside. Now, that is not something that many people are willing to believe, considering that it is the banking sector where the bulk of the ire relating to this current crisis is centered, and certainly it's where the most dodgy balance sheets are. But we are certainly seeing that the banks have stopped going down to a certain extent, and when we look at, for example, the S&P 500 banks or the diversified financials, they're actually well above those mid-September lows, and that's a general positive. We've said for quite a while that it was a precondition for any recovery that banks would start to recover, or that they would lead the market on the upside, at least in the initial part of the move. Banks needs not necessarily lead the entire move on the upside, but they can't go in the opposite direction of any new evolving trend, and it is important for the beginning of any recovery that the banks lead on the upside. They haven't led since sometime in early 2007. It feels like an awful long time ago, and we pointed it out back then and didn't really understand the enormity of the consequences of that underperformance of banks. But it's important to now also recognize that banks have turned to a period of outperformance. I've commented on a number of occasions over the last couple of weeks, and you'll see those bank reviews in the Comment of the Day archive. But there are a number of countries where we're seeing banks outperforming, and it's not at all isolated to the countries that have been most hard hit by this credit crisis. There are a number of Asian countries who have also got banking sectors that are outperforming. So that is certainly something to be aware of and to keep an eye on, because as long as that continues, and the longer it goes on for, the more difficult it will be for the bears to deny that something fundamental is starting to change in the market. It's very easy to become extremely bearish as the situation deteriorates. It is an enormous temptation, and it's very easy to become the biggest bear at the bottom, just as it is to become the biggest bull at the top. And while markets have certainly shown no evidence of forming a bottom, and we have to reiterate that we do not have evidence yet that there is a bottom, but there are straws in the wind, and certainly banks outperforming is one of them. What we can also point towards is the fact that sentiment is just about as bearish as it gets. We're also starting to see that because there isn't really any one sector that is outperforming. Now, we've seen a number of the ones that were most oversold rallying rather well over the last few months. The regional banks did very well, but things like footwear, I think that's Nike, and even home furnishings or forest products have also been some of the better S&P 500 sectors. But those are fairly anomalous sectors and relatively small as in terms of the capitalization of the index. But they were also some, well, Nike wasn't, but regional banks was one of the ones that was most oversold and has rallied rather well. What we've also now seen, particularly with these fertilizer companies, is the markets that were performing best are also now being hit hardest. There is a certain amount of that in a bear market, they take them out one by one and shoot them, because what we're seeing is that the best performing sectors were the last to go, but have been hit probably some of the hardest. The fertilizer companies and a lot of these commodity companies have fantastic balance sheets. They're awash with cash, and I don't think that they should be giving in to investor demands that they give out that cash in dividends. They should be hoarding that cash and looking at acquisitions, because they're probably not going to get a buying opportunity like this in commodities for quite a long time. But the commodity sector is likely to underperform. We have been talking about the supply and elasticity market now for as long as I've been at Fuller Money, and that's been since November 2003. And that has probably got a long way to run, but we are in an interjection in that theme, because we're now in a global slowdown situation, and those recessionary fears, and not just fears, but reasons for economies to contract, are growing all the time. And with liquidity being so very tight and tightening all the time, we are certainly in a period where commodities are not likely to be the outperforming sector. We started talking about commodities starting to underperform a while ago, but it is becoming increasingly evident as this crisis continues to deepen that it's going to take time for commodities to move into a period of relative outperformance against the market. That doesn't necessarily mean that they all have to collapse once this part of the credit crisis actually gets behind us. Certainly, this is a period where we're seeing lots of liquidity being raised, by investors. They're liquidating their positions, and there is a lot of capitulation selling going on, and that was, I think, very evident in companies like Mosaic yesterday. It didn't miss its earnings estimates by much. It was only about 20 cents out of a $2.60 something per share profit. And we had a capitulation in selling where people just decided that, oh gosh, if this thing can't hold, if this thing can't meet its earnings estimate, nothing else can either, just get rid of it. And that is indicative of, well, first thing is that on the charts it's an acceleration downwards, and we're seeing that right across the commodity sector. For long-term investors who are not worried about this market underperforming for perhaps a year, and indeed there are going to be plenty of buying opportunities in the next year or 18 months, but this is a time to start becoming interested in these markets. And it is always the temptation to buy when they're already trending and are looking overextended, because we have so many arguments for why they should be outperforming. But it's much more difficult in a deflationary type environment and where recession is looming and the share has been hit by 50, 60, some of them are even 70% down, to even think about buying. But when they start to find support relative to the market, and when they have started to build support, then these shares are going to become much more interesting. Personally, I think that they have probably fallen enough, but we have yet to see evidence that they have found support around current levels. And that doesn't just go for the fertilizers, but it also goes for the industrial metals and those bulk commodity companies like BHP, Rio, Xstrata, Rio, Company Vale do Rio Doce, and a number of others. So we need to see them finding support both in absolute terms but also relative to their market, and we're just not quite there yet. But over the long term, whatever happens in the markets over the last 6 months, and indeed over the next year, isn't going to stop young people from growing up in places like India and China and the Middle East. And if I was a city planner in one of those countries, I'd be looking at the commodity markets today and I'd be rubbing my hands together with glee, because for my available budget, I will be able to buy so much more of the stuff than I would have been able to do not only 6 months ago. We can also anticipate that while liquidity tightening may slow down mergers and acquisitions activity in this part of the world, it is unlikely to stem the flow of money into this sector from countries like China and India, because they have long-term plans. They don't have a choice about how much infrastructure they have to get in place, because their cultures and the well-being of their economies are based upon finding jobs and education for all these young people. The last thing you want is millions and millions of young people unemployed, because that is what starts civil strife, and that is the last thing that anyone wants. So they haven't really got a choice. They have to start building this infrastructure, they have to find jobs, and they have to improve, noticeably improve, the lives of their citizens if they want their governments to survive and the political systems that are in those countries to survive. So we can anticipate that investment in that area will continue. However, with this credit crisis, we are getting a massive injection of liquidity. And while there is no doubt that deflation is the byword at the moment, we are also seeing the seeds of the next inflationary cycle being sown. Inflation is not going to be a problem for the rest of this year into next year, maybe even the year after that. By the time it rolls around to March next year, we'll have annualized inflation figures which will be taking into account the peak in the commodity prices that we saw, particularly in the soft commodities from March onwards. And once we get past that level, then inflation on an annualized basis is going to drop off a cliff because of the speed with which commodity prices have fallen. That is going to allow central bankers to declare at least a partial victory over inflation, and we could see rates falling quite considerably right across a number of countries. Now, in the US, they have been proactive and they have already dropped their rates quite considerably. In the Eurozone, we had the ECB raising rates in July, and it's going to take a big face-saving exercise before they can move to cutting rates. They're talking about cutting rates. At least they talked about cutting rates yesterday at their meeting. Potentially, they will cut them next month, all depending on what the situation is like 30 days from now. But golly, a lot happens in one day in the markets at the moment. In 30 days, the whole world can change. But we're almost certainly going to see rate cuts in the UK and in a number of other countries. So there is an incredible amount of liquidity being added into markets, not just through rate cutting, but by the printing of money and the attempts by central banks to get the credit markets going once more by flooding them with liquidity. That's quite necessary for the type of environment we're in right now. But if they don't take that money back out of the system, then it's going to be have an inflationary effect over the long term. Now, central bankers will always veer on the side of inflation, the very notion of having an inflation target, rather than trying to alleviate inflation from the system entirely, gives the lie to their closet inflationary tactics. They're much more afraid of deflation than inflation, so they will pump as much liquidity as they absolutely need to into the system. And they think that they have control over how to puncture inflationary cycles, so they're not that worried about inflation until it becomes evident to consumers right around the world. So what we're seeing at the moment, particularly in the precious metals markets, where at the moment we have a loss of faith in money market funds, and people have massive questions about how long their banks are going to survive, and there are very real fears out there that we're going to enter a depression. That's certainly not something that I am predicting in here right now, but I am cognizant of the fact that there are fears that it may occur out there. That is certainly helping to push money into the precious metal markets. They haven't had a huge effect on the way that metals such as silver or platinum have moved, but certainly gold found support around 750, rallied all the way to 900, encountered some resistance there, but it would really need to pull back below 750 and make significant new lows below that to indicate that it was really not going to just range around in the current area. And that is being helped by the flow of money into precious metals. Of course, precious metals relative to the Dow Jones is a very important chart, and it's something that we have profiled on a number of occasions over the years. Back in 1999, we saw that gold bottomed against the Dow, or Dow topped out against gold. And on the past two previous occasions, one was in 29, the other was in the 60s, we saw that there was a massive overshoot in terms of gold outperforming the Dow Jones, and we saw that gold fell to levels of only where the Dow was only a multiple of 5 times the price of gold. At today's prices, to get to that level, we would have to see gold at 2,000, and we have certainly seen gold outperform considerably against the Dow Jones over the last 8 years, and it is down to 10 times the value of the Dow in here today. So we've had a big part of the move so far. There's a good chance that we're going to see gold overshoot and potentially get down to 5 times, but that's not going to happen this year, and it's probably not going to happen next year either. This is a long-term cycle, and there are a number of years left to run in it. What we have said on a number of occasions, it's become a mantra at Funner Money, is that these commodities are best bought following corrections. That is no less the case today than it was at any time in the last 6 years, and it will continue to be the case going forward. Looking at the amount of liquidity that's being entered in, that's being pushed into markets, and considering the fact that we've seen government bond prices rallying for much of the last 20 odd years and more than that, it's hard to look into the future and see government bond prices pushing up to significant new highs and holding them. What we saw in terms of the 10-year yield was that it bottomed in 2003. We've also seen that it went back and tested that level in January and tested the January levels just in the last couple of weeks. But that's three higher lows we've seen so far. That doesn't mean that we're going to see government bond yields pushing up in any meaningful way in the very near future. But over the long term, this credit crisis has lengthened the credit cycle, and inflation is unlikely to be a problem in the very near term or even in the medium term. But over the long term, we're likely to see inflation becoming more and more of a problem, just because that supply inelasticity is going to help to push commodity prices up over the long term. And by the long term, I mean 10 years plus. We're certainly not going to see that being a problem over the next couple of years. I want to reiterate that. But over the long term, we can expect inflation to become more and more of a problem. So that's supportive of gold and, in the long term, supportive of commodity prices. In terms of how the stock markets will do, well, in any inflationary cycle, we don't anticipate it to be a linear move. And certainly, inflation is not going to be a problem in the near term. So, inflationary fears coming back allow rates to be cut, and rate cuts are generally supportive of stock markets. And certainly, we've seen stock markets coming back quite radically over the last 6 months and year. Wall Street is in a secular period where P/E ratios are contracting and yields are rising. And yields have been rising for much of the last 5 years, and PEs have been falling for much of the last 7 or 8 years following the Nasdaq bust. That's not something that's going to be reversed anytime soon, particularly with the deflationary fears that we have out there, and with prices having fallen and the expectations for earnings also coming down. Both sides of that PE will be coming down, and I think it will lead to further lower PEs. What in the US over the long term? But certainly, the US is the biggest capital market, and markets internationally are not divorced from that. And we've certainly seen that arguments about decoupling have been rapped on the head very swiftly over the last 6 months. But the US is not the center of GDP growth for the world. That title is held by a number of the Asian countries. And over the long term, they will outperform quite considerably. They don't have the problem that we have in the West with our banks. I think Mark Farber rather disparagingly said earlier this week that they were too stupid to buy those Lehman structured products. But I think there is a little bit more to it than that. The reason that so many of those products were sold to banks in the West is because those banks were starved of yield, and they saw a AAA rated product paying 2 and 3% above what they would get in treasuries, and they jumped at the chance. But there was no need in Asia to be so greedy for that type of investment, because in a lot of the different infrastructure projects and projects that are investments that are available in Asia, the type of return that was being offered by the subprime related instruments was not in the same competitive arena that it would have been for a number of banks in the West. And far from being too stupid, there just wasn't the allure, I think, for those type of instruments in Asia. That is my, at least that's what I believe from my own reasoning in the subject, because certainly the people working in banks in Asia are no more stupid than anywhere else. What we also see is that their economies are in far better shape. They have ample reserves, and their banking system is well capitalized following the problems that they had following the Asian financial crisis. So they have been hit just as hard as Western stock markets, and a number of Asian markets have been hit considerably harder. But they're in much better positions to outperform when markets generally find support. And there is every chance that we're going to see those Asian emerging markets, particularly, rallying considerably faster than markets in the West. The commodity-related markets were the ones that held out the longest, performed best, even when everything else was coming down. It's probably going to take time for them to recover. And that is probably something that we can anticipate happening when we see these Asian economies performing better, then talk of higher demand for commodities will also be in the papers, and we can see that then that will be when commodity prices and commodity markets will start to recover significantly and probably move to outperformance once more. But again, that's not going to be this year. Given the fact that we have seen such an amount of capitulation selling, it wouldn't be at all surprising that with the rescue package now having been passed, and hopefully with the credit markets starting to ease up once more, that we could head into a year-end rally. What that could do is bring a lot of markets back to their progression of lower highs. And after that, it really does need to be seen whether they can build support above the current lows and push up and break those progression of lower highs. If they don't do that, then we would see, well, if they don't do that, it opens the door for a further down leg sometime in the beginning of next year. But I think that given the fact that we have so many oversold indicators giving us very strong readings, that sentiment is so low that markets are in the regions of their mid-September lows, and that banks are outperforming, I think there is a very good argument to say that we are going to get a rally into the end of the year. What we get after that, we'll be in a better position to predict once we get there, because with the amount of volatility that we have at the moment, and with markets up one day and down the next, it is not the type of environment which is easy to predict, because the easiest markets to predict are the ones that are most consistent and trending best, and we just don't have trending markets at the moment. And with that thought, I will leave you for the weekend, but have a great evening, and thank you for your time.